I don't know about you, but I hear these words kind of all year round. Two words, spirituality and religion. And oftentimes people want to keep those two separate. But actually, when we separate them, that's when we get into difficulty. And so I thought it'd be helpful that if we think about these two words, just to give a quick definition, spirituality and religion. Spirituality is, I think, making the invisible visible. And then religion would become the rituals or the rhythms and practices that we form to help connect to that visibility. So lighting the Advent candles, as we did this morning, are a way to help perceive that the light of the world has come into our midst. Kind of a neat thing to do anytime you light a candle, is to think about the fact that the light of the world has come into our midst. But particularly at Christmas, we light Advent candles, which help us to prepare room for the reality of Jesus' birth in maybe a new and a fresh way. Nativity scenes are the way we visually remind ourselves of the ancient story of Jesus' birth. And we do that maybe like in our lobby, maybe you have a nativity scene at your home, or maybe out on your lawn, or your neighbors do. And our nativity story series then is about a typical family's nativity scene or a nativity set that comes to life to help us connect to the reality of Jesus' birth. And in this week's video, things have gone sideways. Mary and Joseph, as new parents, they have worked really hard to get that peaceful moment when the baby is now asleep. And predictably, if you've been a parent with a newborn, predictably, when you get to that moment, chaos happens, right? So in this instance, Eli, the sheep, has wandered off. And because I guess Elf on the Shelf is trademarked, the shelf elf is causing a ruckus, and the baby Jesus is close to getting woken up and crying. And again, maybe you know that feeling where you've worked really hard, you're very tired, you've worked really hard to get everything serene and peaceful, and then all of a sudden it feels like a three-ring circus has kind of come to town. Well, that's this scene. But then the shepherd returns with Eli on his shoulders, not walking alongside sheepishly. Yep, I heard it as soon as it came out. That's not what I meant to say. I did hear that. But not trailing behind with his head down, but being carried. And the shepherd's words in that moment to this wandering sheep, "You know I'd go to the ends of the earth for you, little guy." And Joseph in that moment has this epiphany, right? He's been really frustrated at the shelf elf, and he has this epiphany, and he turns to us, he turns to the audience, and he says, "This month we get to remind everyone that Jesus has come to gather his flock, even the loud ones, and carry them close to his heart." And that is the good news. That's the gospel message in a sentence. Jesus is the good shepherd who doesn't just welcome the well-behaved sheep, right? The ones who sit quietly or who don't ask uncomfortable questions or who always sort of have their act together. He seeks out the wanderers, the questioners, the messy ones, the loud ones, and he lifts us up and holds them close. And when I think about myself, I find that really comforting, because if I'm honest and if we're honest, most of us have or are wandering sheep. We've wandered at some point. We cause a little bit of chaos. We've disrupted the peaceful nativity of someone's life or their faith. But here's what we discover. The shepherd doesn't love us despite our wandering. He loves us right through it. He doesn't love us despite our wandering, but he loves us right through it. And he doesn't wait for us to find our way back before he starts looking. He doesn't require us to get our acts together to clean things up before he'll carry us home. And so this morning, I want to look at kind of a couple of different aspects of Jesus as the good shepherd. Jesus as the good shepherd. First thing we're going to look at is the fact that Jesus is the shepherd, the good shepherd who seeks. And Jesus actually sets up this situation for us to understand. It's recorded in the book of Luke, and he's speaking, and he says this. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you, this is Jesus saying, that in that same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people or righteous persons who do not need to repent. Now, maybe you've heard that story before, and I think the first thing that always comes to my mind is the math in this situation, because Jesus is telling a story that would have made, maybe made you, but certainly would have made those in the first century, his audience, do a double take. Because if you've got 100 sheep and you lose one, that's a 1% loss. I was there that day for math, in case you're wondering. From a business standpoint, that's still pretty good. Like, if I think about me, and I've never had 100 sheep, I've never even had one sheep. But if I had 100 pieces of chocolate, let's say, and I lost one piece of chocolate, I've still got 99 pieces of chocolate. So focus on the 99 and move on. Any business program will tell you that's actually just very smart resource management. But Jesus, in this story, flips the script entirely. The shepherd, and remember, as June prayed, the Father and Jesus are one. So when Jesus is talking about the Good Shepherd, he's talking about God and himself here. He says, really, essentially, I don't care about the math, I care about the one. This one sheep isn't expendable. It's not a statistical casualty, a rounding error. It has a name, it has a story, and a place in the flock that can't be filled by anybody else. And as we talked a little bit last week, being a shepherd in the first century, and I imagine it's probably very similar today in a number of respects, but it was dangerous work. It was dirty work. It wasn't a romantic job by any means. Shepherds were often looked down upon by society. They lived rough lives out in the wilderness. They couldn't, in that heavily religious environment, they couldn't observe the religious laws because they had to work on the Sabbath. And they smelled like sheep, right? And sheep, though, unlike little tiny pieces of chocolate, they require constant care. And if I'm being real honest, and I think if you've ever been around sheep, they're not the wisest of animals, right? They're really not. For example, how do you milk sheep? How do you milk sheep? The answer, you bring out a new iPhone and you charge $1,500 for it. Just hang in there. You'll get it in a second. Really? You don't get that yet? I didn't think it was that bad. I'm here all morning. But sheep really are not wise. They wander easily, often into rocky terrain or to place where predators are present. Unlike dogs, they don't have a keen sense of direction, so they don't find their way home. A lost sheep is genuinely helpless. In fact, sheep have been known that if a sheep is eating, starting to eat and following the grass that it's munching on with their heads down, they don't look up. And they will, if that grass leads to the end of a cliff, they will literally eat themselves right over the cliff. So when a sheep went missing, leaving the 99 wasn't negligent. It was actually a calculated act of love. The shepherd would have to assess the terrain, would have to look at the weather, the time of day, and the safety of the rest of the flock. But if there was any chance of finding that one lost sheep, a good shepherd would go. And in Jesus' story, the shepherd doesn't just take a quick look around. The text says he goes until he finds it. Until he finds it. Not until he gets tired. Not until it's inconvenient. Not until he's or until he's done, sort of his, what he feels is his due diligence. He goes until he finds it. And that's the heart of God towards you and I. And Jesus is trying to convey that. When we wander, and the truth is, we do, God doesn't shrug and say, well, I tried. He doesn't set a timer and turn around and go back when it goes off. He searches and is searching until he finds you. And in the video, the shepherd knows the sheep. He knows, Eli's habits, goes right to the chip bag. He knows his quirks. He knows the hiding spots. He knows the places that he tends to get stuck. And that's not just good shepherding. That's more intimate knowledge. And I don't know if this has ever sunk in with you before, but that's the way Jesus knows you. Not as a face in the crowd or as a sort of a membership number, but by name and by your story and by our and yours and my needs. He knows our patterns. He knows where we tend to wander. He knows when you're hurt. He knows how you react when you're scared. And what draws you away from safety. In Psalm 103, we're told that he knows how we are formed and remembers that we are dust. Now, that isn't, God being condescending. It's actually God being compassionate. He knows our limitations. He knows our weaknesses and our tendency to wander and to lose our way. And instead of being frustrated by it, he factors that in to his love. And if we're being real honest with ourselves, maybe we've made choices from time to time that lead us or led us into territory that you never thought you'd be in. Maybe you feel like you've wandered so far that that you think the shepherd has stopped looking. God has given up. But that's not how Jesus wants us to know how God works. That's not how this shepherd works. God's love does not have any kind of a geographical or time limit. There's no expiration date. And you don't have to find your way back to him. He's on the lookout for you. And maybe some are here this morning and you figured, oh yeah, I know Jesus is looking for me, but more with disappointment. Well, the reality is Jesus is looking for you, but not with disappointment. Really, what Jesus teaches us is that he's looking for us with determination, not with a lecture prepared, but with shoulders ready to carry you home. And that's such a beautiful thing. And really, when we get to know the shepherd's heart for us a little bit, then our heart becomes more like the shepherd's heart, right? And as we approach Christmas and a sensitivity that the world has to a little bit more of the things that are, you could say, supernatural, you could say spiritual, religious, you could say just a little more sensitive to the hope and the peace and love and joy, real joy, a little bit more sensitive to letting that reality in. The question I want to ask is how are we as individuals doing at in our own sort of individual relational circles, our neighborhoods, our families, our community, how are we doing at seeking? It's fairly easy, I think, to write off people because we, of the things that they have done. And we'll say, oh, well, they've made their choice or they've made their bed and now they have to, lay in it. But what if, and this is the heartbeat, I think, of Nashville Road Community Church, because it's the heartbeat of the Lord. What if we went out, not with judgment, but not with this sort of a sales pitch, but with genuine love and presence? And what if we practiced and pursued relationship with others who don't know the love of Jesus yet with the same tenacity that Jesus pursued, that this shepherd pursued in finding Eli? Really, I think that's healthy. And I think the health of a group of Christians or a church isn't really measured by how many people are here on a Sunday, which is beautiful, but but really whether we're actively seeking lost sheep, right? Seeking the missing. A people who are living out the love of God, we can't and we won't just hope that people will wander through the doors. We go to where people are. We don't just ask the question, you know, how can we get them to come, but how can we go? What are the ways that we can go and be the presence of Jesus? We, just as Jesus values the one who's missing as much as the 99 who are present. So Jesus, the good shepherd, invites us to see that he knows us intimately and that he is pursuing us, not out of disappointment, but out of determination. And he's the shepherd who seeks. Secondly, he's the shepherd who lifts. He's the shepherd who lifts. The Old Testament prophet Isaiah describes God like this, saying he tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those that have young. Now, if you notice, if you remember from the video, when the shepherd comes back, Eli's not walking alongside him, you know, kind of, he's just, you know, been lectured the entire way. He's not trailing behind. He's not even trying to keep up. He's actually being carried. He's draped across the shepherd's shoulders. And if you know it, maybe you've heard this before, but what is traditionally called the shepherd's carry. That's the shepherd's carry. It wasn't just a practical transportation method. It was a position of honor. It was a position of intimacy. The sheep's front legs, just like in the picture, would be held in one of the shepherd's hands, and the sheep's legs would be held in the back legs in the other. And the body would kind of rest across the shepherd's neck and shoulders. The sheep would actually be able to feel the shepherd's heartbeat, hear the shepherd breathing, really sense his every movement. And in the ancient world, when a sheep was injured or exhausted and tired, not able to keep up, or prone to wandering, the shepherd would carry the sheep this way. And here's something really, I think, really that struck me. It's something really beautiful. The sheep in this instance wasn't being punished. It was actually being protected. Sometimes a sheep would wander so often, and this is hard for us to hear in the modern world, but the shepherd would actually break one of the sheep's legs. And it's not out of cruelty, but to keep it actually from getting in life-threatening danger. And while the leg was healing, that sheep had to be carried everywhere. And during those weeks of what would be a forced closeness, something amazing would happen. The sheep would bond so deeply with the shepherd that it would never want to wander again. Not out of fear of punishment, but out of the enjoyment of being near the shepherd. But I think it also illustrates something really profound about God's love. Sometimes what we think is a limitation by God is actually a protection. Sometimes being carried feels like, you know, losing our independence. But it might actually be, and it is actually, the safest place that we could be. There are definitely seasons of life, and maybe some are going through that now, where we can't walk the spiritual journey on our own. In fact, I think those seasons where we can are very few and far between. But maybe it's grief that has, you know, knocked the wind out of us. Maybe we've been significantly discouraged, and so that makes every decision, every step almost impossible. Maybe it's a moment where we're like, I don't know why I'm praying. It's a crisis of faith that makes us feel unable to move forward. In those seasons, I think this is so important. Jesus doesn't just stand at a distance and shout encouragement, right? That's there too. He doesn't just offer, you know, a spiritual pep talk to help us get back on our feet. He actually lifts us up and carries us. And the prophet Isaiah painted this beautiful picture. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. And notice he doesn't say until they can walk again. It doesn't say he carries them until they've learned their lesson. It says he carries them close to his heart, suggesting that this nearness is actually the design for the relationship. And I think there is something in us that resists being carried, right? I struggle with that. I often see needing or asking for help as a weakness. That needing somehow to be carried is like I failed. I should have been able to do this. But what if we recognized that our need to be carried is wisdom, not weakness? What if surrendering to the shepherd, the good shepherd's care, is actually the bravest, wisest thing that we could do? I love it if Eugene Peterson, who wrote the Message translation, he translates Isaiah 40, verse 11 as this: like a shepherd, he will care for his flock, gathering the lambs in his arms, hugging them as he carries them, leading the nursing mothers to good pasture. Hugging them as he carries them. So I used to think that, you know, if you've caused the shepherd some problems, that he has to leave the 99 sheep and come after you, that, man, when he finds you, he is going to let you have it. Or he's like, you know what, can you believe it? I had to get up and leave those other sheep, and they're hard to wrangle, and I've gone over hill and valley and rocks, and I've fought wolves to get here to find you, and now you're going to get a piece of my mind. But it's not a begrudging rescue. For us, it's not a begrudging rescue. It's affectionate care. And the shepherd doesn't carry the sheep, you know, with gritted teeth, you know, counting the minutes until he can put the sheep down. He carries it with joy, holding it close because that's where it belongs. And maybe you're in a season right now where you feel like you should be able to walk on your own, but you just can't. You feel like you should have more faith, or you should have more strength, or more, I don't know, spiritual stamina than you do. I think we need, the greatest gift we could give to ourselves is to give ourselves permission to be carried. Asking Jesus to hold us close to his heart. And it's not failure. It's intimacy is what it is. Some of the deepest relationships with God are formed not when we're walking confidently, but when we're being carried tenderly. Maybe that's for some, it's just to be able to say, I've had a roadblock where I've not been able to ask God to carry me because I felt like he's given me all these things these gifts and abilities, and I should be able to carry myself. Perhaps that was never, ever, ever intended to be. That we would always know that we're being carried by a good shepherd. And then I think about us here. What does it look like for us as a church then to be, as a group of people following Jesus, to be known as people who carry people? I think we are that. But we're people who carry people. Not a place that really that judges whether people are walking fast enough or well enough, but a place that gathers people up when they can't take another step. And that means, I think, being patient with one another, being patient with people who are healing, right? It means creating space for people who have doubts so they can ask questions or they can struggle without being rushed to get better. It means measuring success not by how many people there are or how quickly people grow, but how well and how safely they are held. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen, and I must bring them also. they too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. And when Jesus spoke these words, he was speaking to a predominantly Jewish audience who understood themselves to be God's chosen people. Really, the sheep of his pasture, the flock that he had gathered from slavery in Egypt and given or established them in the promised land. They were the insiders. They were sort of the VIP exclusives. They felt that that's their relationship, VIP exclusives. But then Jesus sort of drops this bomb, really, where he says, I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. Other sheep? Outsiders? He's talking about the Gentiles to this Jewish audience. People who didn't look like them, who didn't worship like them, who didn't have their history or their heritage. And Jesus says, I must bring them also. Not, you know what, I might bring them, or I could bring them if they would sort of just clean themselves up first. Instead, I must bring them. It wasn't optional for him. It was part and is part of his mission, part of his heart, and part of his plan. In the first century when Jesus said this, the idea that Gentiles, non-Jews, could be included in God's family without first converting to Judaism was revolutionary. That got people riled up. It challenged everything that Jewish people thought about themselves and about God's election and what they saw as special status. But Jesus envisioned something way bigger. There shall be one flock and one shepherd, not separate flocks for different kinds of sheep or a hierarchy where some sheep are more valuable than others, but one flock, that there would be this flock, that there would be unity without uniformity. And I think sometimes, again, I grew up in church, I've been a pastor for lots of years now. In the big picture, church hasn't always been really great at this, really, despite the best of intentions, not just Nashville Road, but church in general. We've created sheep pens based on class, education, race, sometimes politics, worship style for sure, and 100 other different factors. And what I think is the scary thing is we've often turned preferences into convictions. And those convictions then often turn into barriers. I'm not talking about Holy Spirit convictions. I'm talking about preferences that we make convictions and then they become barriers. But what if Jesus really meant it when he said one flock? One flock. Jesus says that these other sheep, these different ones, will listen to my voice. And that's important. Not our voice, not our preferences or our traditions or our way of doing things. They will listen to his voice. And our job, the beautiful job that we get to do, is to help other people hear the Good Shepherd's voice. Not to make them sound like us, not to make them conform to what makes us feel comfortable. Our calling is to point people to Jesus, to tell about him, not to point to ourselves. Jesus is the shepherd who carries, who lifts and carries. And then finally, Jesus is the shepherd who holds close. In the video, it's Joseph, that the porcelain character of Joseph, that uses that beautiful phrase. Jesus carries his sheep close to his heart. And it sounds poetic, but it's not just poetic language. It's really a picture of the most intimate relationship possible. When a shepherd carried a sheep, the animal would be positioned, like I said, right close to the shepherd. Could feel the rhythm of the shepherd's heartbeat, the warmth, really, of the shepherd's body, the rise and fall of the breathing. And the shepherd would know, or the sheep would know, without any doubt, that it was safe. It was loved and it was valued. But if you think about it, there are other ways that the shepherd could have carried the sheep, could have slung it over his back like a backpack, not caring about the comfort, just being completely functional. He could have held it in his arms at a distance, which is what I would do if I had to pick up a smelly sheep. I would, you know, I have a grandson. From time to time, his diaper needs to be changed, and when I hold him like that at that time. And I'm pretty sure sheep always need to have their diapers changed. But no, the traditional shepherd's carry was close to the heart, heart to heart, as close as absolutely possible. And why this is unique is in the ancient world, lots of cultures pictured their gods as being distant and uninvolved, right? They were way, way up there, way out there, dealing with, you know, the issues of the cosmos. Maybe occasionally they would get involved and bless a harvest or, you know, throw a lightning bolt down or whatever, but generally they were too important to be bothered with the concerns of humanity, the individual concerns of humanity. But Israel's God, Yahweh, was and is radically different, both transcendent, meaning, you know, ruling all over creation, but also immanent, meaning intimately involved in the daily lives of his people, his creation. The God, Yahweh, who spoke the stars and the planets and the universe into existence was the same God who carried people, his people, close to his heart. Deuteronomy chapter 33 kind of puts this beautifully. The eternal God, the transcendent God, is your refuge. And underneath are the everlasting arms. He's eternal. He's beyond time, beyond space, really beyond a lot of our human comprehension. But he's also underneath supporting you, holding you up, carrying your full weight of the burdens in your life. But being held close to the shepherd means so much more. It means so much more than just safety or practicality. It means affection, right? Think about it. It means delight. It means that you are treasured, not simply tolerated. Treasured, not simply tolerated. Think about it. When you hold something close to your heart, it's because you love it. When a parent holds a child against their chest, it's not just for the child's protection, it's because it's for the parent's joy, right? When you hug somebody, it's not for their protection, it might be, but it's more for joy, it's affection. There's something in us that wants to hold the things we love most close to our actual physical hearts. That's how Jesus feels about us. It's how he feels about you. You're not a burden that he's obligated to carry. We're not a problem that he has to solve. We are beloved sheep that he chooses to hold close because that's where he wants you and I to be. And when you're carried close to the shepherd's heart, again, as I said before, you learn his rhythm, you feel his heartbeat, you begin to breathe often in sync with him. And slowly over time, your heart begins to beat in rhythm with his. That's, I think, that's a beautiful picture of what growing in a relationship with God or spiritual growth really is. It's not just learning information about God, but being held so close to him that his heartbeat, his knowledge, his understanding of you, his love for you becomes the rhythm of your life. His compassion becomes your compassion. His love, his vision, his eyesight, his hearing becomes yours. His heart for the lost, for others, becomes your heart. But do you know, do we know, do we live each day? Do we get up in the morning with this idea that we are held close that day to Jesus' heart? Not just intellectually, but in our soul, letting his love for us settle into the places that we've been trying to fill with other things, with the approval of people or accomplishments or whatever it may be, that we let his rhythm and his love for us become our rhythm. I think one of the most beautiful gifts that you can give to someone anytime, but particularly at Christmas, is giving people your attention and presence, really as a reflection of how Jesus holds you close. really, it doesn't take much to look at, especially at Christmas time when we want to slow down a little bit and we see how quickly and how fast the world speeds up. But in a world where we are distracted, hurried, being really present with someone, giving them your full attention, eye contact, and listening to their heart is actually one of the most loving things that we can do. One of the things that here as part of Nashville Road, one of the things we value, and I've seen it from the moment I got here, is prioritizing relationship over programs. Depth over breadth. And I know that can be frustrating for some, but it's quality time over quantity of activities and programs. I guess it probably sounds a little bit corny, but if you were to put it in a phrase, we sort of move, I know it's going to sound corny for me to say this, but I really think this is the best way to sum it up. We move at the speed of love rather than the speed of productivity so that people feel known and are valued and treasured, not just sort of welcomed from a distance. And that's the message of Christmas. Christmas is the story of the shepherd, not just the shepherd, but really the shepherd who became a sheep in order to seek us, to find us, to lift us, to hold us close to his heart and to unite us. If you think about the video, the sheep, the crying baby, this mischievous elf, there is something I think that's really wonderfully and beautifully human, because we recognize life is rarely a peaceful nativity scene. Sometimes it is loud. Sometimes it is messy. Sometimes we are the ones that are wandering off when everything is supposed to be peaceful and calm. But here's the miracle. The shepherd's return, doesn't it? It quiets the chaos. Not by demanding silence or by scolding people, but by gathering and holding close. And that's what Jesus does. He finds us in our wandering. He lifts us out of our weakness or in our weakness, and he holds us close to his heart. And he welcomes us in our differences. So my encouragement to us and to myself is, you know, we've maybe heard this story literally 100 times, and we want to hear it more and more because it is beautiful. But maybe the challenge for us this year is not to stand near to the manger as someone who observes it, walks past it, or just gives momentary mental assent to it. But maybe we need to picture ourselves as Eli, the sheep who wanders off, who causes a commotion, who needed to be sought after and brought home. And maybe what we need to do this Christmas is, when we see the nativity scene, remember and see ourselves as resting on the shepherd's shoulders, being carried by the one who came to find you. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for the opportunity that we have to gather, to encourage one another, to be reminded, Lord, even as we see the Christmas at this season, Father, when we put up a nativity scene, Father, because we recognize, really, we could leave it up all year, but there, as we prepare again to not to refresh our souls, but to refresh our understanding, to see ourselves again as sheep. Not again, Lord, that's not that you look at us as with an insult, but with compassion. You know us, and that we, like all sheep, have gone astray, each one of us going and doing our own thing, thinking that this is what we need. And Father, I thank you for the story, not just the story, the reality of Jesus' birth. And it's that the story is not just about Jesus' birth, but about a shepherd who became a sheep so that we could be brought home, so that we could be carried home. Lord, if this story in our hearts has, it's ceased to get to our hearts, it's got to our head, but it's about a foot away, Lord, as we look and as we are intentional about looking at you and preparing, or not just for a day, but preparing our hearts again to be softened for the reality of your presence, Lord, would you just again come at us with the compassion, Lord, for those that we're just tired and we're keeping on, but we need to be carried and we feel like we can't because other people need to be carried maybe more than we feel we need to be carried. Lord, would you allow us to see ourselves as individual sheep before you, longing to be able to just stop, or because we can't go any further because we're busted, we're broken, and that your desire, Lord, is to pick us up and carry us and to heal us on that journey. Lord, I thank you for the beauty of reconciliation with you, being made whole because of what Jesus has done, has accomplished, and that we get to live out that reconciliation with one another, encouraging one another, carrying each other's burdens as a reflection of what the Good Shepherd does. Lord, in this season as we prepare, not just to celebrate one day, but as we prepare maybe, Lord, for the continued transformation of our hearts to be like the Good Shepherd, would you just help us to take those gentle steps? And if that first step, Lord, is to say, would you just carry me? Lord, thank you that you will, that you are. And may we be able to encourage one another with the practical ways in which we have been carried. And I thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.